Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. Join us on our journey into the past, the present, and the future as we explore the relationship between technology and humanity. Together, we are going to find out what it means to live in a society where everything is connected and the only constant is change. Knowledge is power, now more than ever. Imperva is the cybersecurity leader whose mission is to protect data and all paths to it with a suite of integrated application and data security solutions. Learn more at imperva.com. Nintex is the global standard for business process management and automation. The Nintex platform helps their clients accelerate progress on their digital transformation journeys by quickly and easily managing, automating, and optimizing business processes. Learn more at nintex.com. RSA Security offers business-driven security solutions that provide organizations with a unified approach to managing digital risk that hinges on integrated visibility, automated insights, and coordinated actions. Learn more at rsa.com.
All right, Marco.
Sean, I need a lawyer.
Yeah, are you ready to get lawyered up?
I am. Yeah, I don't need a lawyer. But I don't need a lawyer because I'm in trouble or anything like that. But I need a lawyer to try to figure out what do they do now in the cybersecurity world. So I know you got
need a lawyer to tell you you're in trouble.
Exactly. I have no idea. Well, I'm just going my way.
Hopefully, with many things we talk about in cybersecurity, you need something to get you out of trouble before you get into trouble.
So, but how do I know when I get in trouble? It's so all over the places. That's my problem.
Exactly. Well, we're gonna spend some time, or this is gonna be part of a series we're doing, Marco, where we talk about the relationship between InfoSec and other parts of the business. And as you guessed it, if you're listening, we're gonna be talking about the role of legal operations and law firms and inside counsel and blah, 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 all that stuff connected to cybersecurity and privacy.
And sounds like a good place to start.
We have two guests joining us today. And one many folks know, he actually is a host of a show here on ITSP Magazine called Leet Posen. So he and his partner, Chris, talk about all kinds of stuff we probably don't get to talk about enough in cybersecurity and privacy. That's Cody Wamsley. And we have another good friend who's joined us for a previous episode as well, Diego Fernandez, coming to us from Argentina today. Thanks, guys, for joining.
Great to be here, Sean.
Same. Thank you.
Yeah, so this is a world that I think everybody has to be aware of, probably is a little afraid of, but I'm hoping that we get to a point where we can talk about the value of building a strong relationship with the legal team inside and out. So before we get there, a quick word about each of you, your role, what you're up to. Cody, we'll start with you.
Sure. Thanks, Sean. Like Sean said, my name is Cody Wamsley, and I am a privacy and information security. I'm with the international law firm of Dorsey & Whitney, where I help clients of all sizes manage their privacy and security compliance obligations, including proactive measures, incident response, and audit, M&A, you name it. If it touches privacy or cybersecurity, probably handled it, and we certainly can as a firm.
Nice one. And you've done a ton of stuff before being with that firm, building products, supporting commercial companies as well. So hopefully we can tap into some of those experiences as well. And Diego, a bit about yourself.
Well, thank you for the invitation. I'm pretty much similar to what Cody was saying. The difference is that I'm from Argentina, actually, and I do the same work down here. Pretty much what it has to do with privacy and cybersecurity is part of what I do. I've done some other work with M&A and IP, but there's, as I think we will be discussing, there's a lot of work going on in privacy and cybersecurity in terms of incidents, and that's part of most of the data I do, yeah.
Well, it's definitely a pleasure to have you both on the show. And I'd like to start with something like many times we look at technology and, you know, people are concerned about taking jobs away. But there is the other side of the medal or of the coin, if you want to say, where it created a lot of jobs that didn't exist, like certain roles that didn't exist. There's some shade of gray on what a lawyer in this case can be. So before we started with Cody, we were talking about if you were thinking to do these jobs when you were studying, there wasn't even a way to get to prepare for that, to get that specific education. But then the business environment changed and here you are. So how have things changed, Cody? Let's start with you. Since when you start in this kind of business, in this kind of line of lawyer, let's say, profession?
Sure. Thanks, Marco. So I guess I'll tell a story that I feel like I've told a lot over the last couple of weeks, and that is sort of how I got into this profession. So I'd always been interested in the intersection of law and technology, specifically with privacy and cybersecurity, since I was really first thinking about what I wanted to do as a career, you know, after I decided maybe astronaut and fighter pilot weren't in the cards anymore. It was, you know, here's the next thing is cybersecurity lawyer. And I remember being in college and then going to law school. And when I was interviewing at law firms around the country and telling them this is what I wanted to do. So this was in the mid-2000s. Said I wanted to do privacy and cybersecurity law. And all of the attorneys that I was interviewing with would look at me and they'd shake their heads and they'd be like, what are you even talking about? We don't get any business in that space. That's not a thing. you know, if you want to do law and technology, if you want to be involved in that, you need to be a patent attorney because that's what we have in our space, intellectual property, patent law, you know, helping inventors protect their technologies and litigate when people are infringing on their patents, that kind of thing. That's where the intersection of law and technology exists to us. And that was the message that I got all the way into the mid-2000s, actually towards the end of the 2000s. And I remember saying during these interviews, I was like, well, maybe you don't have it now, but it's coming because as more and more companies are putting their information online, as people are interacting more and more, you know, it's inevitable. There's going to be litigation, of course. There's going to be privacy issues that come up because companies are collecting more and more data all the time. And people eventually, it's going to hit a point where people are going to have a problem with that. And so, you know, I remember telling them this, but again, back then it wasn't really a thing, that law firms were thinking about. And so, for myself to get into the industry, I was like, okay, well, if that's what it takes to get into law and technology, I guess I will be a patent attorney. I actually really, enjoyed being a patent attorney. But my first real job was actually in-house at a cybersecurity software company as a patent attorney. So I got to do both. I got early exposure in the actual security industry as a lawyer. And so I got to learn both the regulatory issues that were going on, but I got the angle of coming at it from the product and intellectual property side. So that was sort of how I got into it. And now, of course, ever since then, privacy law and cybersecurity law have become sort of their own animals. There's a lot of law firms that have dedicated practice groups to these. They're constantly hiring. There's an entire certification body. You might be familiar with the IAPP that's popped up. I don't know how old they are, but, you know, that's sort of the de facto mechanism to determine whether somebody's interested in privacy law is if they've looked at or at least achieved one of these certifications and that sort of thing. We can talk about the usefulness of the certifications at another time, but it's sort of like if you see that on the resume, okay, well, at least they're interested in it. Now we kind of have an idea of where to slot them if we were going to bring them into the law firm. So, you know, it's really grown and exploded over the last couple of years. And with the advent of, well, certainly the Ed Snowden revelations, which led to the GDPR, and now we've got the CCPA and a variety of other privacy laws that have sprung up all over the world. It's really become its own thing, and it's only growing and it's accelerating.
Yeah, and FTC stuff coming today. In fact, lots of inquiries there. A ton of questions on what you just said, Cody. But I'd like to get Diego's thoughts on the history of the role and changes in what services are offered by firms, how inside counsel looks at different things, perhaps as the role of cybersecurity grew over the years as well.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, John. So I have a different story on that from Cody. I was asked to move into this. I was not, you know, it was not me saying I want to do cybersecurity or privacy. It was not in my DNA. We had a need. We saw this growing, as Cody saw that many years ago. We saw there was a trend in the US and Europe, and there was a lot of business coming, and we want to make sure that we had a robust department of cybersecurity and privacy. So I moved from merely IP to do more privacy and cybersecurity. As you know, I was in the States for almost 3 years studying there, and I worked in a large firm in their patent attorney department. Also, I was helping them with technology things and then with the privacy. And what I've seen, you know, I come from a different jurisdiction where it is not something common to see a lawyer with a technical background. So you don't have this system that you have in the US, that you have the undergrad on a technical aspect and then you become a lawyer. Is you go directly from high school to law school. So you are 18 years old and you start studying the law. And so 22, 23 years old, you are on your own in the world. And so what I've seen is I've seen a grow of, like working in groups. I work a lot with when I have a client, I work with their security team and all the technical people from the team. And then it's the lawyer who brings the legal staff in to make it work in a way that, you know, you help them mitigate something or you plan ahead how to do things or even think what you will do if you have a security incident. But normally working in a very, very large group, because we lack this, you know, it would be great to have like a coding type of lawyer here down in Argentina where you can find in the same person different skills. But even with the time, I've learned a lot and I've been studying a lot about security. I still work with very, very knowledgeable people here down in Argentina who knows exactly what to do in terms of the technical part. And then I try to bring with my team, of course, all the legal stuff to make it work. So that's the change I'm seeing.
Yeah, it's interesting. And speaking of change, so in looking at this over the years, I've heard a lot of stories around the role of legal in incident response, right? And the value of bringing somebody in to help manage that process and then the communications and protecting the company and others. But there's much more to cybersecurity and much more to the role of legal counsel in the company. I'm wondering what other relationships throughout the life cycle of cybersecurity and privacy are there, and what types of communications and conversations are there? Everything from strategy and planning down to ultimately the inevitable breach response. I don't know who wants to take that. Cody?
Sure. So a couple of things. I would say operational risk is probably the primary category that you'd be describing aside from incident response. And so that would encompass product development. It would encompass third-party management. It would encompass, internal security policy development, all those types of things. And when it comes to the legal aspect of that, you've got a variety of sources of risk. So first would be your regulatory piece. So if you're in a regulated industry like financial services or healthcare or something like that, you're going to have actual regulations that dictate and drive certain security requirements in a variety of things. And so, as a lawyer, it's your job to interpret those rules and help the company develop policies or procedures or whatever they need to put into place in order to comply with those rules. Now, that's a compliance function. There's usually a compliance organization that's there as well. But in order to do that, you have to interpret the law. And so that's what the lawyer's job is in that aspect. And when it comes to product development, it's a similar sort of approach, I guess, when you've got a new product that the company is wanting to launch and you've got a lawyer that understands the technology and the legal risks, they can counsel the product development teams on their product roadmaps and helping them understand what some of the requirements should be when they're developing the product to make sure that they're either meeting regulatory requirements, which may or may not exist in the industry, but also to mitigate risks down the road. And some of those risks, we talk a lot about privacy and security sort of as a conflated issue, but they are separate. And so there may be privacy risks that you have to address. There may also be security risks. And it's rare to have one lawyer or one person that understands both of those, because oftentimes they're at odds with each other when you're talking about privacy and security. And to be able to wear both hats is hard. And so a lot of times you'll have one privacy lawyer and a security lawyer, or a subject matter expert in each of those when it comes to the product development cycle. And then when it comes to the third party management, that's its own total animal. I think that comes down to
beast comes to mind.
Exactly. It contracts, number one. I mean, obviously, that's a legal piece of this. And so making sure that you've got the proper security controls spelled out in your contracts. And again, that may be driven by regulatory requirements, but it's not necessarily. And so, if you're going to be transmitting sensitive information to a vendor, or having them process that on behalf of you, or simply giving them access to a system that contains sensitive information or sensitive infrastructure, you need to make sure that you've got the proper contractual controls in place, and you need a lawyer to do that, to negotiate those types of provisions. And then also the auditing and ongoing monitoring aspect of third-party security. That's something that I think a lot of times lawyers don't touch on and frankly, probably don't have exposure to. I can't tell you how many times I've run into lawyers that don't know what a SOC 2 is. And so it's, these are important.
The left SOC or the right SOC?
It depends. Is it the type 1 or the type 2? I'd say the type 2 is the right one.
You do need two SOCs. I mean. Yeah, no, this brings me to maybe the next thing that I'm going to pass the ball to Diego with this. And it makes me think about the importance of creating the cybersecurity culture. I mean, this column with Sean, our main goal is to redefine security. And you can't redefine security unless you change the culture of the business. And that's not an easy task, that's for sure. And so that the cybersecurity and the legal department is not the department of no, but is the department of let's create value by accomplishing certain things and preventing maybe problem to happen. So maybe it is important for everybody to know that you need two SOCs. Diego, what's your thought on that in the culture? Sure.
You touch upon a very important thing, I guess, and I will speak for the region, not for Argentina. One of the barriers that we have, and maybe you do not have that in the U.S., is that we don't have very, very high fines and sanctions. And so it's been very difficult to, convince the board that some of the measures that you were proposing from a legal perspective and even from a security perspective were worth taking based on the risks. And we were talking about risk assessment. So when you make this risk assessment, you normally would say, what would happen if something goes wrong? And being a lawyer, you have to, of course, consider sanctions and apart from reputation and all that, but what are the fines that we can receive? And when you go to the board and show the numbers, and the numbers are very, very low, sometimes it's very complicated to to bring this culture of do the right thing. At the end of the day, businesses try to run profit, and so I think that lawyers, and I'm talking again from where I stand, lawyers, we have been doing a great effort to show the value of doing the things in the right way. And during some time, I guess we have made some progress here in the region because we have shown that it's not just about getting a fine from the regulator. It's about showing your consumers, because most of the companies have, they're developing a product, it's a service or a product. They have consumers, and consumers are starting to see those companies that, you know, take care seriously of privacy and security have companies that are taking care of them. And so this is a PR thing. And so when you were saying, Marco, how you interact with different scenarios and teams, I think we are starting to, you know, the lawyer is starting to get into some terrains in which it was not used to. Like, we were not talking about PR and human resources thing. We, you know, you were about the law and what you have to do and what the contract has to say. Now we are talking more about, you know, you should do this because even if it's not just because it's the right thing, then it has a lot of, you know, enough components that can affect the company in different ways, even more if you are a company being listed. And so that's what I see in terms of, you know, you touch upon the culture. We need a culture of doing the right thing. And it takes some time. And we tend to be a little bit, you know, slower to keep on the pace like U.S. companies or European companies. But I think that Latin America is going in that direction. And I hope that we have the same conversation 5 years from now. And I can tell you that we are up to it.
I'll throw in one thing here on in terms of the culture between legal and information security and probably the rest of the business is historically here in the United States, at least, you know, the legal department was there to scare the hell out of everybody because a lot of this doesn't ever really ever materialize. And so the legal departments are losing credibility when that's their approach on things. And it's not just, you know, internal, but it's external legal, you know, because that's how lawyers' minds are trained to think is what's the worst that can happen. And let's focus on that. I think that in modern times, and especially with consumer level kinds of things, security and privacy are actually benefits. These are things that are not, shouldn't be considered costs. These are marketing benefits. These are things that you can sell if you're doing it right. And I think that, you know, the more sophisticated legal departments and forward thinking lawyers are out there, is not just, you know, you still have to be focused on, of course, the compliance risks and all of that, but also like putting on a business hat and thinking, okay, what are the positive things that can come from this compliance as well? And let's focus on that, because it's a lot easier to sell to business people things that are going to help them make money than, you know, than things that are just pure cost.
Excellent points, Cody, and maybe Diego, you can build on this a little bit. When I think of, and Marco mentioned this, the Department of No, right? When you think of taking a project to legal, it's like, ooh, they're gonna rip this apart, tear it to shreds, and tell me all this stuff that I can't do with this project. And the same goes for cybersecurity. I'm wondering, in both directions, are there lessons we can learn from each other in the different roles? Obviously, legal teams and legal processes have been in place much, much longer. Are there methods and ways that legal have worked with the business to overcome those challenges of don't be afraid to come to us, we're actually here to help, that may help cybersecurity teams follow a same model? And is there something in return where cybersecurity has solved a way to tackle a problem that perhaps legal can benefit from?
And, you know, elaborating a little bit on what Cody was saying and your question, I think that, you know, that image that we have from the legal department it has evolved and it has changed over time. In some cases, I think it has changed because people have put a lot of effort to change, but in other cases, it's just the pressure from the client. You know, be it the internal client or an outside client, they don't want you to just, you know, the typical memo saying this is wrong and you shouldn't be doing this, that doesn't work anymore. You have to find a way to walk through and with your client to make this happen. And then you have to find a way, you know, of course, there are some projects that cannot see the light because they're just not possible. But if the client comes with, you know, and then any project and what they're expecting from you is more, help me make this happen and help me find a way, a legal way, something that, you know, I can do and I'm not in trouble, but rather show me, you know, point one, two, and three are wrong. And I think that is that's a change. And I think clients being in or out, they appreciate going to legal and find a friend, if you may. Of course, we're not friends, but they feel comfortable that you can go and legal will help the business make this right. And that's what I'm seeing during the last, I would say, couple of years. And most of the clients, you know, and even more when you have these kind of clients that are tech clients, that they are coming with projects, new projects every other day. They need a different type of counsel, I would say. A counsel from 50 years ago would not work with that. They're looking for someone different. And I see that that's happening. And that's my vision here. And I work a lot with US firms, as the firm Cody is in. And that's what they, when they require our services down in Argentina, that's what they're looking for. And maybe that's why we have learned over time to work that way.
That's very, very interesting. And I would be very curious to get the crystal ball right now and look into the future and kind of see, with all the regulation coming out, the privacy issue, technology, big data going into everybody's phones and business, I'm wondering how the role of the lawyers that work with the cybersecurity team is going to evolve, especially when you come into play advanced technology where you're trying to give the responsibility to he's responsible for a decision made by artificial intelligence or automation in vehicles and self-driving cars and so on. So I know it's a big question. I'm not expecting, and I'm not keeping you accountable 5 years from now, but where do you see this going? One each. Let's start with Cody.
Well, I think there's two critical skills that a lawyer will have to have moving forward in order to be successful in this space. The first is an appreciation for risk and an understanding of risk tolerance. You can't be the completely risk-averse lawyer that you were trained to be and be successful. You have to understand what your client's appetite for risk is and be able to make judgment calls based on that, because they will stop coming to you if you are always the most conservative person in the room. It's exhausting trying to deal with that and work through problems, because it's always just this endless cycle of questions and issues and problems. And a lawyer should understand their client well enough to be able to make judgment calls and say, you know what, I think this is a risk they're capable of handling. And you can still outline it in some way, but you don't have to be constantly going back and covering your ass on every little thing, and written memos saying, oh, well, remember we talked about this and that, and you know, it scares people and they just don't want to come back to you anymore. There are plenty of things that I think that you can successfully navigate through. The second thing is technical understanding of your client, is having a technical understanding, because in an incident, for example, when you're dealing with that, you've got strict timelines. And if you don't have a good appreciation or understanding of your client's technical environment, from the get-go, and you have to come up to speed and you've got to meet a 72-hour notification deadline, good luck. Because these things are going to keep coming and you've got to make some real fast calls and you have to get up to speed on what happened in an incident very quickly. And if you don't have the technical understanding of that, it's going to be next to impossible, because the volume of this stuff is only increasing and the timelines are decreasing. And so, you know, I think that's the other key component to this is you've got to have a technical understanding and an appreciation for risk.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with Cody. Actually, I would just take his words and make it mine, but I couldn't agree. That was the idea I had. You know, you have to understand what your client needs. I want exactly what Cody was saying, what the risk they are tolerant to, and make decisions on that basis. I've seen the frustration from clients to go back and back with questions, and the lawyer just responding, you know, this is not good, this is not good, or. And then the other part that Cody was saying, the technical part, I totally agree. I think that, you know, junior lawyers, they understand technology much more than others. And for example, if you're working on a fintech project, you just not, as a lawyer, you're just not you need to know what the technology is about. You need to know where the things are, or the worries of the client are, what is important, what is not, what are the regulations of the banking industry, etc. And the same for big data, or if you are with artificial intelligence, I think we will see lawyers that we have a specific skills on different technologies, and maybe we have a big group depending on the project, bringing different lawyers to play the game. But I totally agree with what Kobe was saying.
Yeah, I love that. And maybe as we wrap here, because both of those examples were the legal team's responsibility to understand the client. And I'm wondering if there's a message, a quick one from each of you on what you would expect the client to embrace as they engage with their legal partners. Again, sticking with cybersecurity and privacy here. So Diego, we'll start with you, and then Cody can have the final word.
Sure. What I think that from this side of the table, what you would like to see from client is that they are clear and straightforward from the very beginning. We can cut a lot of time if we just understand what you need. We're always ready to help, and we are always flexible. I think that's something good now. We're very flexible to work with the client on whatever their needs are. But sometimes, you know, it takes a couple of discussions or emails going back and forth to really understand what the problem is and what they're looking for. If we can know that in advance, I think we are going to be much better helping them with any of the problems they have.
Yeah, I'll echo Diego's point in a slightly different way, but getting involved early, involving legal early is critical, but it's about being comfortable doing that. And I think the more interaction that you have and the more personal interaction that you have with legal, the easier that will be. The reasons that you want to do it are numerous. I mean, if you're dealing with an incident, you want to keep all the communications privileged as much as you can. And the sooner you get legal involved, the sooner you can attach attorney-client privilege. When you're doing risk assessments, you don't want to, or building new products, you don't want to be months down the road, building something that's just prohibited by some law, and then you've got to scrap the whole project because you've taken so many turns that have taken you way down a path that you can never launch. Having legal involved early on in that is also important. But the other thing that I'll say is pick up the phone. Don't just do email. Talk to people on the phone or something like that, because I think that lawyers particularly, some are better at this than others over time, but they like writing a lot. And it's when you're sending emails back and forth, you might get long-winded responses from lawyers that are unnecessary. And then, when you're an engineer, you're like, oh, I just wanted an answer. I don't need all, paragraph after paragraph after paragraph of analysis on this. I just wanted something. I think you can.
Can I use this open source or not?
Right. So I think, picking up in my experience, and I can't come up with an example where this is not true. It is faster to talk over the phone than it is over email, and you get everything accomplished. You can do it in 5 to 10 minutes, usually over the phone, where it might take days of back and forth over an email just to get a mutual understanding of whatever the project is. So that would be the other piece of advice I would give.
All right. Well, I never thought I would say this, but I really enjoy hanging out with lawyers. And
nobody ever said that, Marco.
Jokes apart,
you should do it more often.
Yeah, well, definitely with you guys, I really enjoy that. So I wanna thank you. I think it's a very long conversation that is never gonna end. That it's the business scenario evolves and technology keeps putting us in front of completely different situation that maybe we didn't even expect 5 years ago. So, Sean, I think we can wrap this and see where we go from here. Maybe bring in some other department of no or yes, or anyway, part of the business into the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to thank both of you for some insight. I mean, endless functional aspects that we very briefly touched on, from operations to R&D to third party and IP. And obviously all that has a legal aspect and a cybersecurity aspect to it. So great to get this overview and a view into the relationship between the two functions. And thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
RSA Security offers business-driven security solutions that provide organizations with a unified approach to managing digital risk that hinges on integrated visibility, automated insights, and coordinated actions. Learn more at rsa.com. Nintex is the global standard for business process management and automation. The Nintex platform helps their clients accelerate progress on their digital transformation journeys by quickly and easily managing, automating, and optimizing business processes. Learn more at nintex.com. Imperva is the cybersecurity leader whose mission is to protect data and all paths to it with a suite of integrated application and data security solutions. Learn more at imperva.com. We hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you learned something new and this story made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.